We are in teleconference. Yeah, let's go ahead and bring the House Resources Committee to order. And it's 5689. It's 3:45. I am sorry that we did not start on time, but you know how things go this time of the year and with the court schedule and everything else going on. What we are going to do is start taking testimony on House Bill 331, the Forest Resources and Practices Act revision. And as soon as we get a quorum, then we will stop somewhere in there and stop taking testimony, because we are planning on moving out a couple of resolutions that we had on the calendar earlier. But while we're waiting for a quorum to get here, we will go ahead and start taking testimony so we can have it for the record. The schedule that I have, we'll start off with Mr. Tom Hawkins, who is Assistant Commissioner to DNR. Mr. Hawkins. Yes, sir. No, not 331. Resolution. Mr. Hawkins, are you ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Yes, go ahead. We are on teleconference, so if you...
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Hawkins. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. The past 6 months have been spent in a very industrious review of the Forest Practices Act. Many of you remember during the last legislative session the interest that the House Resources Committee had in a number of topics, forestry, one particularly the implementation of Alaska's Forest Practices Act. During the interim, the governor directed the resource agencies to take a look at the Forest Practices Act, decide how it worked and if it needed changing and how it might be changed. And the agencies, the Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Environmental Conservation, the Department of Fish and Game, the divisions of governmental coordination, set about a review process, which included the formation of a steering council, a steering committee, representing the forest industry, the fishing industry, the recreation and environmental interests. And over a period of 6 months, we hammered through the existing Forest Practices Act. The bill before you, House Bill 331, is 33 sections. It goes into considerable changes in the way forest activities occur on private, state, and municipal lands in Alaska. The 33 sections, besides affecting riparian management, which is a primary focus of the bill, also focus on agency coordination, the Board of Forestry, a variety of state timber planning processes, and represents a substantial improvement and modernization of Alaska's Forest Practices Act. A number of other folks are eager to testify. I'll leave the bill analysis that's been prepared with you and tell you that the purpose of the steering council approach to this was to take this complicated issue and hammer out a consensus between the interests of Alaska's forest resources and bring to you a bill which met and satisfies all of those particular interests. We came extremely close, and as the testimony that follows me will reveal, a primary problem is in the interaction that this Forest Practices Act has with federal lands. And I put on the board a summary of three options, and I'll share a draft of those options with you now. I will reserve until later the detailed technical discussion of this, because the other presenters will give their legal and policy positions. I think forest practices in Alaska needed attention. I think this bill has done dramatically what we were expected to do. I think any time the stakes are this large, the interests are so diverse, it's pretty remarkable to have a general agreement on 32 of 33 bill sections. I'd like to indicate our enthusiasm, and I realize that as I do that, I must also offer our apologies for bringing the bill to you so late in the session. However, hammering out an agreement or an almost agreement with this many groups, as you yourself know, is a difficult process. And we kept hoping that we'd have a completed package. But nonetheless, we do urge action this year. And we urge that action because we can't afford to postpone modernization of these standards for another entire season. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hawkins. At this time, while we have established a quorum, members present are Co-Chair Davidson, Vice Chair Jackal, Representative Hudson, Sharp, Foster, and Chairman Menard. I would like to hold off taking more testimony on 331 and take up a couple of resolutions that we have in the committee, which shouldn't take too long. The Chair would like to move both of those resolutions, starting with the first one, Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 30, Coordinated Research Oil Spill Technology, sponsored by Senator Rohde, and we have the staff person, Mr. Baker.
Mr. Chairman, very briefly, the Senator's on the floor right now and was unable to attend, and I'll quickly just tell you what the resolution does. There's three parts to it. The first, it works with or requests the Science and Engineering Advisory Commission and the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation to coordinate together and explore additional ways to coordinate their activities and other activities of federal, state, and local agencies. The second part is to have the same two groups look at establishing a Prince William Sound Science and Technology Institution and request the governor to recommend some ideas in that area. And the third would be to request the governor to consider hosting a conference that deals with the Prince William Sound, but more generically, oil and oil spill technology and ideas. That's basically what the three parts of the resolution does. And I'll stop at this point. I know you're pressed for time, so I'll be very available for questions.
Thank you very much, Mark. Are there questions from committee members? If there are, Co-Chair Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Science and Technology Institute, could you expand on that a little bit? What did the Senator have in mind as regards to that institute?
One moment. Mr. Chairman and Co-Chairman, at this point, what we'd like to do is leave it to the Science and Engineering Advisory Commission, Alaska Science Technology Foundation, to look at what that should do. Basically, seeing that we are in one of the states with the highest exploration of oil and gas, that we should have and be on the leading edge in regards to oil spill technology. And that is the belief and kind of the conceptual belief.
What was the, as far as so this fiscal note does not, this is only a suggestion at this time?
Yes, and my assumption would be, Mr. Chairman, Co-Chairman, would be that the governor would come back if they feel and deem it necessary or worth looking into separate legislation and other items called the capital budget and so forth. Mm-hmm. But it's to request the two groups to start discussing the issue.
And then, Mr. Chairman, if I may continue, what did you have in mind as far as the conference was concerned?
It's an idea that we'd like the governor to consider, again, because Alaska is on the leading edge in oil exploration, that we should become that focal point and bring in worldwide expertise to Alaska and discuss some of the current activity that's occurred as well as future ideas, and more of a brainstorming as well as maybe some resolution of some ideas for the future. And again, it's encouraged the governor to bring Alaska into the focal point of that.
Is this, recently the vice president has been in Cordova. Did the idea for this come from the same group of people who hit him up with this kind of idea, or is this a separate?
It could have. It's hard to say. This was prepared several weeks ago. I think there is some ideas out there floating around among the communities that Alaska should just be on the lead. I think I'm sure the group has, some groups have approached, as you just mentioned, the vice president.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
Thank you.
Representative
Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We are on teleconference.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you kind of bring me up to date on who is the Science and Engineering Advisory Commission? Who is on there? Where are they at? And that kind of business.
To be honest with you, Mr. Chairman and Representative, I don't know all the makeup of the group at this time. I can quickly find that out, but I don't know the exact who's on and who's not.
But it is an appointed body of people,
yes,
and they have a budget?
They probably have a small budget, more like boards and commissions usually have. Mm-hmm.
And the, of course, the Science and Technology Foundation is an established entity in Anchorage and has a budget.
Yes.
And this resolution presumes at any rate that it will be coordinated with the University of Alaska.
Yes, the idea is to get those two groups plus all the different agencies to start some coordination and working together on these types of issues.
And it envisions a creating some sort of a standing scientific organization or foundation or something at any rate in Cordova so that they can track this on over the period of time?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is one of the ideas. They may deem another location or not even that type of a facility, but the idea is to want to get the two groups starting to coordinate. The second stage is here's two ideas that we'd like them to look at, that there seems to be some interest among the different communities around that area.
Any further questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Figgis. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
The resolution is before the committee. Is there committee discussion?
Chair, I move Senate Committee Resolution 30, Coordinated Research Oil Spill Technology out with individual recommendations.
Are there any objections to moving this resolution out with individual recommendations? Therefore, that moves out. Then we'll go back to the testimony. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. The testimony that we had on... with House Bill 331 on the revisions of the Forest Practices Act. The next person I would like to have up is Amy Kyle, Deputy Commissioner of PDC.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you online?
Yes, we are. Please.
I appreciate the opportunity to testify. We participated with others that you'll hear from in the steering committee to prepare this legislation. From our perspective, the particular strength of the legislation is that it allows for a strong cooperative relationship between the Department of Environmental Conservation, the Department of Natural Resources, and the industry in water quality issues as they pertain to forestry. Under this agreement, the Department of Natural Resources would be given, or under this legislation, the Department of Natural Resources would be given some enhanced enforcement capability and enhanced approval authority for forest practices operations. That would then allow us to develop water quality based standards that pertain to forest practices under the overall leadership of the Department of Natural Resources. We think that that's a beneficial approach in that it allows the Department of Natural Resources to take the lead in field operations. It allows us to focus our limited resources on water quality issues specifically, and we think it enhances the overall program. So we definitely support this approach. There are a lot of other features of this legislation that you'll hear about from other people who testify before you. So those are our specific comments on it. We appreciate your considering it, and I'll be happy to try to respond to any questions that the committee may have as it goes through the process. Okay.
Thank you very much, Amy. Are there any questions from committee members? If not, thank you. Next we have Mr. Cohn, Deputy Commissioner of Fish and Game.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Norman Cohen. I am Deputy Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The Department of Fish and Game was a steering committee member and participated fully with the rest of the agencies and industry and other forest users in this process. It was a very long and difficult negotiation, which came out with a result which we are quite pleased with and urge that the committee take positive action on as quickly as possible. The provisions of this bill provide a greatly increased protection for fishery resources on private lands as well as fishery and wildlife resources on state and other public lands. And this has been a concern of the department for many years concerning timber harvest and its impacts on our natural resources. And we believe that there is some real great benefits with this bill. As you know, the effective date is not intended to be until the beginning of 1990. And if action isn't taken this year, we're concerned that the provisions would not be implemented until 1991, which would be another two seasons before we could see the benefits of the process that we went through. So we do fully support the bill and urge its passage.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cohen. Are there any questions for committee members? If not, thank you.
I have a question.
Oh, you do. Okay. Representative Davidson.
Thank you. Now, I understand that Fish and Game has drafted regulations for Title 16. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davidson, we have presently a draft, what we call the interagency draft of proposed habitat regulations. That's correct.
And where are those regulations now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davidson, those regulations were submitted to each of the state agencies for their comments. Those comments have been received, and we're presently making adjustments in the proposed regulations prior to going out for public review.
I'm sorry, would you please repeat what you called the internal, you used a phrase, a term to describe the regs at this point.
It was an interagency draft.
Interagency draft, thank you very much, Mr. Cohen. Now, how were those regulations affect this legislation before?
Mr. Chairman, during the period of time when we participated on the steering committee, the Department of Fish and Game made it clear that as long we were planning that the protections for fish habitat in terms of streamside protection would be negotiated through the Forest Practices Act. So we believe that the Forest Practices Act is the proper place to make those kind of regulations, and the standards that you see for buffers and for other riparian protections are what we believe should be the rules that would apply. So as long as this process is going forward and is on track, we see that this is the proper place to deal with those kinds of protections would be within this act and the regulations that would follow from the act.
So the interagency draft regulations would not be available for public review until the legislature acted on this legislation before us, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davidson, no, there are many aspects of the habitat regulations which deal with all kinds of in-stream activities. Those we plan to continue to go forward with. The issue is whether we would do anything special for timber harvesting activities outside of the stream. And as I said, we believe the proper place to deal with it is through the Forest Practices Bill that you have before you.
So then the interagency regs that we do have or that have been drawn up that do not affect the Forest Practices Act, what's the time frame that you have as far as, or in mind as far as going for public review?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davidson, I'm not exactly sure of the date when they would go out for public review, but we're hoping to get the process done by the fall, in the fall.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Cohen, I do have one question following up that we were we're talking about, and it probably follows up with what Representative Davidson was talking about. On the fact, when we were in Senate resources yesterday, when they were talking, various people that did speak were nervous of the fact that if this legislation did not go forward and was not passed this time, that the department should not go forward in developing regulations. Do you have a response to that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As I stated, there are many portions of the habitat regulations that we're talking about, and under any circumstances, we plan to go forward with basically the package. The question, I believe, was whether there should be anything special in the regulations dealing with things that are covered under this act. And what, as long as this act, the bill is going forward and the consensus remains with it, then we plan to not do anything dealing with those things which are contained within the act.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions, Mom? If not, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, at one point in the future, I would like to hear the comments of the... at some point in the future, Mr. Chairman, I would like to hear more about the streamside protection positions of the department.
Okay. Certainly. Thank you very much. Next, we have Diane Meyer, Division of Governmental Coordination. How is your last name?
Mayor.
Mayor. Okay. Would you please come forward?
Thank you. My name is Diane Mayer. I work for the Division of Governmental Coordination and had served on a technical committee which provided guidance to the steering committee in the development of this legislation regarding procedural matters. And throughout that process, I think that we have successfully resolved questions regarding implementation of the bill to the satisfaction of all the forest users, with the exception of the single issue that Tom Hawkins raised initially, that is, how would the bill affect federal land? And there is a paper that was distributed to the committee discussing the various options for addressing that issue, and a chart presented here that simplifies the options. I don't know if you want to get into it at this point and really get into the issue, or if you would rather hear from the other participants on what they view the issue to be and then follow up with the discussion about it. I would, at your pleasure, I guess, discuss it.
Probably that might be a better idea if we went through, but how long would it take you? Can you do it like just within a couple of minutes?
Sure.
Yeah, on it.
Maybe
we could touch into that, yeah.
The New Forest Practices Act spent considerable time addressing state, municipal, and private lands and establishing standards and procedures for operations on those ownerships. Towards the end of the process, the issue of how might this act influence federal lands was raised. And while the act itself did not, while the participants did not address federal lands specifically through the Alaska Coastal Management Program, which is distinct legislation, we do provide a link towards reviewing forest practices on federal land. So the question then before, the question that was asked in forest practices is what extent should we in this act have legislation which gives guidance to federal lands, both for setting policy direction for the Coastal Policy Council to establish regulations which may have an effect then in review of federal forestry activities, and in setting that policy direction, how much discretion should be given to the Coastal Policy Council in establishing that their regulations. So there's basically three options of looking at this question. All options assume that there is no direct application of the specific provisions of the Forest Practices Act on federal lands. So in asking the question, well, what direction should be on federal lands and how much discretion should be given to the Coastal Policy Council, the options outlined on this table show, I guess if we go to option two, does everybody have the options paper before you? Option two has the objective of having the Forest Practices Act be completely neutral regarding federal lands. It makes the statement that the specific provisions of the Act have no application to federal lands, and it also has there be a legislative finding that whatever standard the Coastal Policy Council sets, that it is okay for that standard to be different than what's in the Forest Practices Act. But it gives complete discretion to the Council to establish regulations on what should be the standard within the Alaska Coastal Management Program. On either side of that neutral position, then, moving to option one, which is currently in the bill, that creates a broad performance standard for operations on federal land, but again severs any of the specifics of the bill from being applicable to federal land. It states that the degree of resource protection on federal land shall be no less than that provided on state lands. Goes on to say, however, the specific provisions would not apply. So in that case, it sets a general performance standard, but the Coastal Policy Council would write regulations. Under the option three, it goes a step further. It sets, under option three, the legislation would set in statute the regulatory standard that would be applicable in the coastal program for federal lands. And it, the substance of that is on the back page of the options paper, which is a version of the regulations that the Coastal Policy Council originally passed, I believe it was in 79, in regulation for timber harvest and processing. So the question again with the bill specifically addressing state, municipal, and private lands, the outstanding question is how far should it go in giving direction to the Coastal Policy Council for building regulations under the Coastal Management Program, which might be applicable to federal land. And this option paper identifies the language presented. If you, in the discussion, the current bill does contain language in option one. There was of the consensus, there was a majority of the members in the steering committee agreed to that. There was not a complete consensus. And in looking at the options as alternative ways to resolve this issue, the acceptable to column on this chart identifies how the different groups represented on the committee feel about implementing either of the options.
Thank you very much. Are there questions of Dan? Thank you. At this time, I would like to go to the Matsu LIO. Is Ted Smith there? Over.
Chairman, this is Ted Smith. I'm going kind of crazy here trying to figure out what these options are. The document that Diane is speaking of is not in our possession, and we just don't know what the options presented are. Can you comment on that?
I just received a message from staff that they just sent it on the telefax, so you should be getting it soon, Ted. Do you want me to come back to your testimony a little bit later in the process?
No, thanks. I'd like to make some statements now, and then if I have a chance to look it over and have any problems, well, I'll be in touch with you on that subject. I did, in fact, serve on the steering committee representing municipal lands. The process was a long and arduous one. I think there are still some problems. I guess if I were going to make a recommendation, I'd say that I can't make one, basically because while I did agree to the details that were discussed, I've only had this bill in hand 24 hours, and I'm not sure that the bill adequately represents the agreements that were reached. I know that that's the basic assumption, but I'm not prepared to accept that assumption because of the fact that drafters have been known to make mistakes, and because of the fact that there seems to be decisions being made at the last minute in this thing, and so it's very difficult to stay up with it. I don't share the sentiment that we must get this passed this year. The existing act has been in effect for about 8 or 9 years now. It does have some defects, principally in the enforcement process, but in spite of repeated requests, nobody has been able to tell me that the act has failed in any specific instance to protect the environment from a logging activity. There have been cases of violation of the act, but I don't believe we have very much at risk in taking our time with this thing. It is a six-month product. As you've heard, there are still changes going on even now, so that I think it would probably benefit by some interim consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ted. We appreciate it. Is Mr. Hill there also?
Yes, he is, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I didn't really have too much to say either. I just had enough time just to start reviewing the document. I'll just stand by and listen. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Then we'll go to Pete Isleeb, United Fishermen Association. Did I butcher it pretty bad, Pete? Or?
Yes, you didn't.
We don't like honesty this late in the session. Go ahead.
I was referring to United Fishermen of Alaska, not
I
Association.
See. Okay.
My name aside. I was the negotiator in this forum, the steering committee forum, for the fishermen. And while there is a single hang-up left, I feel that that can be resolved here and now. And I indulge you to consider it and then move it out of committee. The discussion concerns three options of a relationship to the Coastal Policy Council or a relationship to federal lands and the activities or the lack of activities of the Coastal Policy Council. 10 years ago, I was a member of the Coastal Policy Council when we were dealing with the standards that are in option number 3. I can even see my fingerprints in option number 3. But as a steering committee member, option number 1, I sold something to get option number 1. In part, I sold third-party suits, judicial review, to get option number 1. Option number 2, as a former Coastal Policy Council member, I do not wish to be able to preclude any activity by an oversight by the Coastal Policy Council. I would prefer to have option 1 or 2 as a former Coastal Policy Council member. But the UFA bought and paid for option number 1. I believe it really relies on this committee to make that selection here and now. And that's pretty much my statement, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, you say that UFA bought option 1. That's what's where you people stand as far as these options are concerned.
As far as these options, actually to the fishermen, any of the three options are probably palatable, but we paid for number 1 in losing something. Mm-hmm. And now we're here are going to presumably give back something that we paid for. If the industry wants us to bring back up third-party suits, judicial review capability, I guess it's back on the table, because we did have a bunch of items on the table and we divvied them up. We all got something to eat we didn't want.
Mm-hmm. Everybody got spinach?
Yeah. Sometimes that happens in this process, as we all know. But Representative Hudson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pete, where in the bill can we find
what you gave up. I mean, what section is that in?
Page 24. Near the bottom, D. It says no person may maintain any administrative or judicial appeal or any other action or pending of any kind challenging any decision or failure to act by the department with respect to the compliance of timber operation on private land with this chapter or regulation, standard, directive, or order issued under this chapter. It, in short, it says there's no judicial review where I could stop and act. And matter of fact, at one point we thought we had a decision whereby we could, I, as an individual or a group, could sue the state, not to stop an action, but to next year change that regulation or change their approach of dealing with something. But that even we lost that. We gave up at one point the ability to stop an activity, but then we were told we couldn't even affect the activity for another year. We gave up that. I sold it.
Are there any other further questions? And thank you very much, Pete. And next we have Ms. Thais Schaub.
Representative Menard and Davidson, my name is Thais Schaub. I'm Director of Governmental Affairs for the Alaska Loggers Association. The ALA supports the consensus process established by Governor Cooper, and we believe it will ultimately result in legislation that we can support. The legislative proposal before you represents much hard work and many hours of toil to come to a consensus. However, it falls a little short of a consensus. That we have one key issue, or we have a couple of issues that we're concerned about. One main issue, which has been outlined a little bit for you here on the board, regarding federal lands. The process was not intended to affect federal lands, but as it stands right now, it does. When the steering committee was put together, the Alaska Loggers Association wasn't originally on the steering committee. We specifically asked to be on the steering committee to represent those loggers that log on private land and state land. And we did eventually get a seat on the committee, but it wasn't from an aspect of federal lands. We weren't dealing with federal lands. It actually wasn't until we had draft legislation that we figured out the link and the problem did exist, and it was going to apply to federal lands. At that point, we began discussions with the administration, the Division of Governmental Coordination. We spent many hours with Diane Mayer and others trying to figure out how we can make this thing work. Unfortunately, we haven't quite got to that point. We weren't quite able to get to final agreement before the legislation was proposed. The proposed legislation states that the degree of resource protection on state land, on federal land, shall be no less than that provided by this chapter for state land. It also goes on to say that the specific provisions will not apply, but the state land standard is a 30-meter no-cut zone. So federal land would have to at least meet that standard. Without the specific provisions applying, I'm not sure quite how that would come out, but that's basically our concern, how that would come out. The Coastal Policy Council would also write regulations that would specifically lay that out. We feel that we want to see with assurance how this affects federal lands before it goes forward, and option one and two doesn't allow us that insight. Option three that we have attached actually to this legislation, we would like to submit as an amendment in section 27 of the act. It actually would be inserting in place of what you have up here as option one. The amendment recognizes the federal land management plan process and the standards that are set up by that process, and establishes standards for state land that Diane had referred to earlier in her testimony, that was standards that had been set by the Coastal Policy Council quite some time ago. And additionally, we are concerned about the need for a 30-meter no-cut zone on state land as well. We feel that there should be an option to be able to, on a site-specific basis, when it seems to make sense, to go in to harvest closer. The other thing that I want to mention real briefly here is that, and there was some discussion about this earlier, about habitat regs and 319 reg for the non-resource pollution. We feel that this has to go forward in hand in hand as it applies to forestry with passage of the Act. And if I understood Mr. Cohen earlier, I think that's what he said would happen. And that is what we would like to see, is once we have an Act, then go forward with those regulations. I'd like to say that ALA has taken this process very seriously. We've participated throughout, and we want to continue to participate to a successful conclusion. I might also say, yesterday Representative Davidson had asked for some specifics on our amendment, and our attorney Jim Clark is here, and if you have some specific questions on that, he'd be happy to respond to that.
Okay, I'll probably wait till Representative Davidson comes back. Okay. Are there any further questions from committee members from FIAS? Representative Hudson?
No, I'm thinking.
Oh, I see.
I think most of us are handicapped, Mr. Chairman, because we've only got this too.
Right.
And it's a very comprehensive piece.
Yes. Mr. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I just like to ask the person testifying, reading the cover, a letter from the Department of Natural Resources from the Commissioner, she says that the support, near total consensus support of representatives of Native corporations, burrows, fishing groups, and environmental groups, but I don't see anything about the timber industry that has a consensus in it. Is that inadvertent or?
Well, we did come to a tentative agreement with the rest of the steering committee members. I think it was on March 1st when we first came to a conceptual agreement. And it wasn't until we had the draft legislation that we saw a problem with federal timber. We didn't anticipate it early enough. We probably should have thought about it earlier, and unfortunately it wasn't. And at that point, we asked to get this resolved, and that's basically the issue that, in the end, we did not ratify the agreement based on that. So we weren't part of the consensus in the end.
Right, thank you.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thais, can you, you've worked in this whole process here. Obviously, as you mentioned the other day, that there's a lot of good things about this whole thing. Can you outline some of those from a timber point of view?
Well, I think that most of the good things are more from, I guess, from a fisheries protection point of view. It wasn't prescriptive. It was very general. Now there's a prescriptive act that says exactly how close you can harvest to a stream and that kind of thing. The native corporations have on private lands, they put a cap on how much timber they could take. That was good from their standpoint, in that they kind of know how much to expect. From an industry standpoint, it was probably, you know, better to have the old act, but we recognized that there was a need for a revision, and we offered to take part in the process. I guess that's
so. So a clear understanding of all the rules by all the players. Can you speak, Mr. Chairman? Can you speak just a little bit to what made do you really foresee any major problems with the 30-meter restriction, or is that fairly fair?
I've been in our testimony. We said we had a concern for it. We weren't totally solid one way or the other whether we were absolutely against it, simply because we hadn't totally evaluated what the effect of it was. And since then, I've been trying to get a sense from the Division of Forestry, you know, what happens in the Susitna now. Do we very often need to go closer? And the option is there. I believe the option is there in the Susitna plan. But they don't very often exercise it. It's Bob Dick is here. He can speak to that much more than I can. But I was also concerned about other lands that are state lands elsewhere, Icy Bay, other areas that there may be reason that makes sense that to go closer to the stream than that. And I just felt that option should be left open. In the time places where it makes sense that they should be able to do that.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Is Bob Wilshire here from Sea Alaska?
I'll be testifying for Bob.
Okay, please.
My name is Rick Harris. I'm a Vice President of Resource Planning and Administration for Sea Alaska Corporation, which is the regional native corporation. We're headquartered here in Juneau. Some of the committee may not be familiar. We own about 330,000 acres of surface estate in southeast Alaska. We're involved in fairly extensive timber harvesting in the region, currently averaging about 100 million board feet a year. We're a member of the and still are a member of the steering committee. The purpose of our testimony here today is to praise the effort of the steering committee and say that we fully support the committee's effort. We'll also encourage the resource committee to also support the consensus legislation. In making that statement, we do, however, recognize that we don't have a full consensus. We are not taking a particular position on the issue that's outstanding, because it really doesn't affect us. But we do hope that the parties can come together and we can pick a suitable option. In saying that, we recognize that there is also concern about the ability to get this legislation through. And I say that again, we strongly support this legislation. We hope it can get through this year. If it can't, then we hope that it's going to be critical that the legislature and the administration help hold that process together. We think that you can send a strong political message to help hold it together. The administration can also do that. One area of particular concern that we do have is that both there are administrative processes on the table. The Fish and Game Habitat Regulations and the ADEC 319 program, which is a non-point source pollution control program. And each of those standards can come out, regulations can come out, which would affect or regulate the timber industry. Without this forest practices bill, we will not have a guiding legislative direction to those regulations, and so everyone can simply scatter to their separate corners. If that happens, we're concerned then that we'll lose the consensus legislation. A few other comments that I would like to offer is that everybody gave up something in this. The timber industry came into this process recognizing that they were going to have to give up some trees. And we've done some preliminary evaluations on what that is. We looked at old harvest units or old areas that we'd harvested and applied new standards. In that, we found that we were losing in areas of previous timber harvest up to anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million in timber. But we've given that up, recognizing the importance of that for fisheries habitat. So I bring that to your attention just to say that everybody gave in this process. I mean, it was a very difficult process, but I think it was one that ultimately provides better protection for the fisheries resource and assures peace in the forest. So with that, I would hope that this committee can hopefully resolve the issue that remains in front of us or help resolve that issue. If we can't, then we ask for your continuing oversight to help in this process so that it stays together so that we can get it rapidly and quickly fixed next year. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rick. Appreciate it. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said the amount of timber that on past harvesting areas you lost was probably around $1 million. What percentage of the timber would have that been?
We looked at two different areas where we'd previously harvested. In one, it would have been about 7.8% of the total was taken out of that we did harvest. We would have lost under the new standards. And that was one area involving about 23,000 acres or 2,300 acres. Another area we looked at, and I give you these numbers with a great deal of reservation because we've tried to figure out how to make this work, and it's not quite, it's still in the process of trying to understand the rules. But another area we looked at involved about almost 1,400 acres, and in that case it involved about 2.4% of the total volume that was removed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does Sea Alaska log on any federal lands?
Not at this time, no.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? Thank you very much, Representative. Appreciate it.
How many square miles is that?
630,000.
I don't know. 640
acres to a square mile. So that's about 2,530 square miles. I might offer that not all of that is commercial forest land as well. There's a lot of only about 50% that even is considered commercial forest land.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next, Bob Loisel from Plaquan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Loisel. I'm Chief Executive Officer of Plaquan Forest Products. We, too, were a member of the steering committee. We feel that the steering committee has very nearly reached consensus on this bill. We think that the only major remaining issue is the one that's depicted on the board with regard to the federal timber. Some of you will recall yesterday that I also voiced a concern with regard to the buffer strips on state lands. During the interim, my friends at DNR have convinced me that while I may have an interesting philosophical argument with regard to those buffer strips, and whether or not that first 30 meters from the stream is a no-cut zone or not. In practice, they generally do not enter that area. And so I guess my argument, philosophically, I still believe in it, but from a practical point of view, we're not going to push that point. If the state is not seen fit to enter that zone, there's no point in my making an issue of it. So as far as we're concerned, the only remaining issue is the one with regard to the federal lands. Our preference is the option three, the specific regulatory standards for federal lands. We feel that that's, from an industry point of view, that gives the industry the greatest level of comfort in terms of knowing what they're dealing with. The other two options leave some unknown factors that the industry will have to deal with at a later date. So we would prefer option three. But by and large, we support the bill as presented. We think that it's a very good effort. It was a very difficult effort. As Rick Harris of Sea Alaska mentioned, everyone gave up a lot in this process. And hopefully everyone gained a lot as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Co-Chair Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, your name again, sir?
Bob Loisel.
Mr. Loisel, it's my understanding that your feeling is that the standards for state and federal timber should be different standards. Is that correct? Is that a fair characterization of your position?
As they're described in the bill, we feel that it would be difficult to apply the state standards on federal lands without sticking to the exact prescriptions that are in the state standards, i.e. the 30-meter no-cut zone. To say that you're going to achieve the same end as the 30-meter no-cut zone is a nice thing to say, but to do it without actually having that no-cut zone is, you know, might be argued is not possible. And so we would rather not see that argument arise. We would rather have it dealt with, you know, separately. We're not trying to say what the standard should be on federal land. We're just saying that they shouldn't. We don't feel that this is the right mechanism for imposing those standards.
I guess my question in Mr. Lozell is, I don't understand why you would prefer to see different standards on the state and federal lands. Why would you want that?
Well, we feel that the federal, you know, land planning process is quite detailed and involved and well capable of determining what is best for federal lands. We think that the resources are more than adequately protected on federal lands and don't see the need to impose another set of standards on them.
So, am I hearing you say then that the state standards are a little more stringent than federal standards?
They may or may not be. We're not, you know, I'm not sure at this point.
Well, when you say that you feel that federal standards are protecting federal resources quite well, or if I could characterize you as saying that,
right?
What's the difference?
I'm sorry, sir. I don't quite understand your question.
It seems to me you're saying that the state standards are a little too stringent for protecting federal resources. Is that correct?
No, I'm not saying that they're too stringent. I'm just saying that you have two different sets of standards, and to try to impose the state standards on top of already existing federal standards would probably cause a lot of confusion and difficulty.
Why would that be?
Because you'd always be sorting out whether the state standard applies or whether the federal standard applies.
So you prefer to see one standard or the other, is that correct?
We believe that the federal standard is adequate, and we think that that should be the only standard that applies to federal land.
So how does the federal standard, when it comes to, or if you could give me a couple of specific examples, compare or differ from state standards? What are the areas that give your group or your organization's special problems?
Well, the standards in particular are with regard to riparian zones and whether you have
the riparian,
which is the stream side zone, whether or not you have a 30-meter inviolate zone as prescribed in the state standard, or whether you have a more flexible zone as I believe occurs on the federal lands.
What is the standard on federal lands?
It depends. It's site specific. It depends.
More site specific.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Are there other areas besides the riparian standards that you have concern with as regards differences between state and federal standards?
There could be. There are other areas addressed, such as log transfer facilities and roads and other things, but the major difficulty normally seems to be with the riparian zone.
And has there been any? What's the result? I'm assuming that you've been in the industry for a long time, and that you've seen the result of different standards, say between Oregon, private and state and federal lands, or forestry, or forest, as well as Washington or someplace. What do the studies say as far as protection of wildlife and protection of stream beds and fisheries resources? What do the studies say as regards to how those separate standards deal over time with the problems?
Are you asking me which standard is best? I'm not sure that anyone can quite answer that at this point. There are a lot of studies. I think everyone concludes that some protection of the streamside zone is necessary. I don't think there are conclusive studies that say that in any given instance this is exactly what you ought to have. This is part of what this new forest practices bill provides for, is the framework for ongoing research to try to resolve some of those problems. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't claim to be able to tell you the definitive answer. I don't know that anyone can.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll go back to Matt Sue, and we have Gladys Dixon.
Mr. Chairman, this is Cladis.
Yes, we hear you. Go ahead and give us your testimony, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you loud and clear.
I just wanted to urge you to please take your time and give this bill a little bit more thought. I, for one, as Ted mentioned a while ago, we knew nothing about it, heard nothing about it. I called at least 10 different people involved in very closely with the timber and with this, all these different issues. No one knew anything about any of this kind of action. I know something needs to be done, but I would urge you to not just look to agencies to make decisions, but allow the people to at least have time to read and to study and have a little better understanding of what's happening. They are the ones that ultimately have to live with whatever decisions are made. Thank you.
Yes. Do you have copies of the bill, Gladys?
Yes, I got it about 4 hours ago.
Okay, yes, it is, even for us, it's 31 pages long. It does look like it might take us a smidge to get through it. Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate that. Then at this time, we'll come back to Juneau here, and we have Mr. Keith Walker with Whitestone Logging.
Chairman, my name is Keith Walker, and I represent Whitestone Logging Company. It's a small family-owned company. We employ about 200 people, working people. We found out about this bill while we were loading a barge yesterday. So anyway, me and the boss flipped for it, and I lost, so I'm here. I can't really add too much more than what we think what the people we're talking to, the squawk box there. We think we would like to have a little bit more time to review this. As being some of the regulatorees, the people being regulated, we'd like to assess the impacts of this bill on our company. We do log on state land. They log on federal land. Now we log on Native Corporation land. We have five existing logging contracts, varying anywhere from 1 year to 25 years. This bill is going to have an impact on those contracts and our dealings with our employers. A lot of times they'll dump all their environmental stuff on us and say, figure it out, go for it, you know. So we would like to have a real good look at this bill. Generically or in general, we're being regulated by the DNR, the ADF&G, the Forest Service, the Army Corps of Engineers, the Coast Guard, the EPA, the DEC, the Public Health, OSHA, and who knows, maybe the Girl Scouts, but it's getting pretty thick. We're getting a lot of these what they call interagency agreements, and sometimes we don't know what is coming from where, and it gets real confusing. What we would really like to see come out of this process is to be regulated by one agency. That would be a real blessing. I think that if that happened, we would get better environmental compliance. We would be able to deal with people that could look at the whole resource, the whole forest-based resource, instead of just one little tiny segment, you know. We feel that this bill is basically a fish bill, and that instead of being just a primarily focused on one type of resource, that we should be looking at the whole forest-based resource rather than just basically the forest practices fish bill. It's going to have a long range legal and operative impact on the logging industry. I think that we have time to do it right. I think that I agree with the other people here. I think things need to be addressed. Certain things do need to be addressed, but I think that we should take our time and do it properly. And I think basically that's about what I have to say.
Thank you very much, Mr. Walker. Co-Chair David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Walker,
You say you think basically this is a fish bill. Could you be specific about what you mean or where in the bill you think it's too fishy?
It's really dogs down on the riparian management area.
Yep, I'm sorry, sir.
It really focuses in on this riparian management area. We can see problems with it that from an operational point of view that would be some difficulty. We're not sure where we're even allowed to cross the thing. We're not sure how the laws of trespass apply. For example, if you inadvertently or even on purpose went into the zone and cut something, if 10 years later you go to jail, if the river changes course, which they do all the time, and suddenly your stump moves to the 5 meters, then they come back and check you 2 or 3 years later, how's that going to affect us? We have some real heartburn with the criminal business, most of us think we're fairly law-abiding citizens, and we don't like to be lumped in with child molesters and the like. But there's some things, yes, we have real trouble with. Are these riparian zones? For example, on native land, they're still being conveyed to the native corporations. Is the state going to ask for a third-party interest on all anadromous fish streams, for example? Is there going to be an easement corridor? Things like that. And I think that these things could come back and haunt us at a later date. And it could be much later, or it could be, who knows. We've got timber contracts right now. Like we've purchased timber up in Cordova. We bought the timber. Now, does that mean we have to renegotiate the contract because some part of it's out, things like that? So there's a lot of questions that we have.
I just have one other question. Early on, Mr. Walker, you talked about they'll drop something on us. I didn't know. Oh, they'll drop the environmental. You used a term there I didn't understand, and I was wondering what you meant by the term, but also who they were.
Well, I'm kind of nervous, and I probably don't remember what I said.
I'm nervous too, Mr. Walker, so don't be nervous. Thank you, Mr. Walker. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. I would like to announce that I would probably like to close this testimony at anywhere from 5 to... Thank you very much, Mr. Walker. A little bit after 5, we could go a little bit longer. And I would like to say that if there is anybody here in the room or on the teleconference that cannot come back at a future time, we can bring this before the committee right now. You know, my personal feeling is we have a pretty big bite here. And although we've had a lot of push from various groups that we are on the fast track, I have to get a little more comfortable feeling before I feel that it's on the fast track, and we'll probably, I guess I'd like to get some consensus from the committee members and what they're representative of our.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just comment that although I have a great deal of respect for some of the people who are working on the compromise, and I think that they've done a lot to try to move towards consensus, I don't think we're there yet. Besides that, even though this is on a recommendation from a lot of people that we fast-track this through, the bill is something that I think is important. It's not something I think we can rush through the legislative process. I think we'd be irresponsible if we attempted to move it through in the 2 days that are left in the session, and I would agree with you that the bill needs to be considered by the legislature, and unfortunately with the timeline that it was introduced, we do not have time, and I would support holding it until we can consider it.
Thank you. Representative Foster.
I like Navarre's plan.
He's kind of getting to be a ring around here. Representative Hudson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd sure hate to see the momentum lost here, right, and the coordination efforts here, because as I'm listening to this here, I sense that there's a number of positive things that can be done by developing legislation that crosses these lines, protects the habitats and the fishery streams, and perhaps provides for some sort of coordination of permitting and control and things like that. I don't know, but that's something that, that needs to be expanded, I think, as well. If we were to pass this out, I was going to suggest that, as a minimum, that it have a letter of intent that calls for the issues that are still in dispute to be brought back to us next year, and that we'd make a commitment to it. But if it's your intentions to hold it over until we have an opportunity to really give all of the issues a thorough grounding and maybe try to come up with some reconciliation between the different parties, then that's your decision.
Thank you very much. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that to have a bill that was given to us Wednesday and expected to be passed is not realistic, and I believe it's so comprehensive that it takes a lot of study, and basically I guess I'm agreeing with Representative Navarro and saying I would sure like to be able to look at this and study it and get some more expert opinion on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Then I would, one of the things I guess we could talk, this doesn't really pertain to this, but I guess if the legislature had the power to control some regulations, that we wouldn't have to come back with a bill every time, maybe we'd have a little different process. But since the public...
Are you lobbying, Mr.
Yeah, right.
Chairman?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Then I'll get back to the subject. Is there any further comments from committee members? Ted, are you there? Do you want to have any closing comments? And Ted, are you in Wasilla still? Over. He left.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. What did you ask us in Wasilla?
I asked Mr. Smith, is he still there? Did he have some closing comments?
He had to go to a meeting in Houston and he just left.
Okay, that's fine. Then who is still left here in the room that still wants to testify? Is there anyone that cannot come back another time? Alan?
Everyone that is here has spoken.
Okay, that's real fine. Thank you. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Alan Stein. I have to leave tomorrow to go to Ketchikan and pick up my gill netter and bring it up here. I've fished in Alaska for 18 years, and I've also logged and have great sympathy for my friends in the logging industry. And I am somewhat disappointed that my friend from Kwekwa Inc. took away some of my ammunition by endorsing the 30-foot buffer on state lands. There is irreparable harm that occurs to the salmon streams and has been occurring for the 18 years that I've been in southeastern Alaska. By irreparable, I refer to Mr. Murphy. You have a copy of the National Marine Fisheries Service 30-meter buffer in your package, and that's based upon a great deal of research by the National Marine Fisheries Service. They have determined that after about a 90-year period, the streams become sterile that have been logged because there's not a recruitment of woody debris in them. And he made this assertion at a Forest Service meeting about 2 months ago down at the Hill. To me, that kind of statement from a very reputable federal biologist that there is a need for a minimum of a 30-meter buffer, a 100-foot buffer, should carry a great deal of weight with us. And I think the committee, in making their recommendation, took that into consideration. I listened to fish and game biologists who also said that a 100-foot buffer was a minimum for protecting the fisheries resource. In the 18 years since I've been around, I know that the fishermen have been trying to get that at least a 300-foot buffer and have compromised a great deal in trying to get this 100-foot buffer. But there is still resistance among the Alaska Loggers Association to even this minimal protection. And yet, even within this last year, if you could turn to some of the documents that I've included in my testimony, it's in the middle of your packet. We have letters from Fish and Game that as late as last fall in Rush Creek, they were dumping all kinds of debris right into the middle of coho habitat while the fish were spawning. I can name up in where king salmon, sockeye salmon, coho salmon production area in Haines. Right now, there's trees leaning on a very steep slope, and they're about to be yarded, and they're going to go in the Kelsaw River and wipe out that spawning habitat there. If you go to Fubar Creek, if you've been in the military, Fubar, you know what Fubar means. It's beyond all reasonable repair. And indeed, there was landslides there that created that situation on Prince of Wales Island. On Howling Dog Creek, we had the same situation on Prince of Wales. This all last year. On Lancaster Cove, they're blasting without fishing game permission. that's Ward Creek, in Lancaster, putting culverts so that the fish can't bite. There's a multitude of problems that are going on, a multitude of irreparable harm that is occurring right now. And while I understand your reluctance to give due consideration to a very important piece of legislation, I'd like you to give a lot of weight to the fact that the committees and all of the participants in this process gave 6 months of extremely heated debate and consideration of all the recommendations. They crossed every T, dotted every I, and I think the bill as it stands could be passed on, and I would hope you would do so. As to the harm, what is the harm of passing a 100-meter buffer? Because that's the issue. That is the only issue as I see it. The gentleman from Kluckwan Inc. said that, from Sea Alaska said that 2.4 to 7.3% of the timber would be lost. But the National Marine Fisheries Service is saying that the loss, in many cases, is irreparable to log right down to the banks. And when we're balancing a loss to the timber companies of 2 to 7% against hundreds of years of loss to the fishing industry, I don't think it is fair to the fishing industry to impose that burden on them, nor to hold up the bill, because this loss is going to occur this year and next year until legislation is passed. At the most, the Forest Service figures is an 11% loss, and this figure was given by Dave Gibbons at a meeting at the Department of Natural Resources several months ago. He said the largest volume of timber loss is 11% in this 100-meter area. So I think that's an extremely strong argument for creating it, and I would endorse option number one. I don't think, whatever the legislature does, the fishermen can continue to accept the loss that they are suffering as a result of the violations of state law. We're talking about violations of temperature standards, the sediment standards, and I don't think the fishermen are going to be back at the table. We're going to have to be in court. And we've lost a great deal of the ocean due to the oil spill. Please help us out on this.
Thank you very much, Representative Sharp. And I do have two other people that I would like to two or three quickly get to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my only question is, why does it take 30 pages if all we need is a 100-foot setback?
I'm not a lawyer, and I think the lawyers drafted it. And I think that a lot could be settled by merely giving us 100 feet, as a matter of fact.
Okay, Representative Navarro.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just note that the bill is introduced, has an effective date of January 1 of next year, so even if we passed it now, it wouldn't take effect until January. I think that is a good argument right there for waiting and further reviewing it during the interim. If the committee and the legislature determines that the work that's been done, and I might mention that the work that has been done is not going to be thrown out the window, whether or not the people that have worked on it up till now continue to work on it, and I hope that they do, the work that's been done thus far will add a lot of momentum to how the legislature deals with the issue. So, I appreciate all the work that's been done on it. It's just that I just don't feel real comfortable with passing the legislation in a less than a week's time. So I still wish to consider it further.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate it. Mr. Kohler, Bart Kohler, Sea Alaska Conservation Council. Well, there was an SE marked on my
fingers.
Yeah. Stand at it.
It's close.
We work with Sea Alaska once in a while, but we're not that close. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bart Kohler, and I work for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, which is a local coalition down here in Southeast. SEAC had a member on the steering committee. It was a board member of ours who's not able to testify today. We worked long and hard on trying to hammer out this compromise solution. I will not read my letter. I'm sure you're all capable of doing that, and I hope you give it a careful review. I should just make a couple comments on this whole option business here. One thing is that option number one was a compromise in and of itself, that we had proposed a much stronger language, and Alan Fitz is here to address that in more detail if necessary. One point that Representative Davison had made earlier is federal lands are indeed public lands, and we really have trouble trying to have two different systems of managing public lands. If you're going to have a state standard that's of a certain strictness, then certainly the federal government should be required to honor that standard. We have tried very hard to work in good faith in this process, and it's very disturbing to see all of a sudden some kind of option three and an amendment popping out outside the consensus process, kind of the 11th hour of a very long, hard road. You should know, just in your studies of these different proposals, that option three is based on language that's 10 years old, at least. A lot of important research has been done since then. Since it is based on 10-year-old information, it's no wonder that the Alaska Loggers Association supports it, because it doesn't incorporate a number of important restrictive notions that have come up since then. I think if we are going to open this up, a fourth option or amendment should be considered very carefully by your committee and the Senate. And that was mentioned earlier by Alan Stein, is the recommendations by the National Marine Fisheries Service, that they took their policy that they had in place in 1976 and basically revised it based on years and years, 10 years of research. And that's been provided for your information. I just would note that we just went through two sets of U.S. Senate field hearings on the management of the Tongass National Forest and Ketchikan and Sitka about 2 weeks ago. It's interesting to note that every Southeast Alaskan commercial fishing organization that testified at those hearings supported the National Marine Fisheries Service standards as a minimum for protecting streamside zones on federal lands. And certainly it does respond to the need of setting specific regulatory standards. But they're certainly different than what the loggers would support. And I should just say for the record that we can support no less than National Marine Fisheries language. And finally, I think if people somewhere down the line, their finger's going to be pointed at various factions on why this thing fell apart or whatever, and I'm sure you can sift through that very well. But if people want to cast blame on us for demanding that the federal government and their management of public lands in Alaska, they blame us for demanding that the feds live up to Alaskan standards to protect critically important Alaskan fisheries, then so be it. And we're proud of that fact that we can assert our state's rights, and the feds should honor those rights. Thank you very much for the chance to testify before you today, and I wish you good luck.
Thank you very much, Bart. Are there any questions? Not. Thank you. Then, Bill, is it Watt?
I could testify.
Okay. Alan? You want to go ahead and testify?
Sure.
Is there anybody else that wants to testify on this after Alan has come before we close it off with it? Okay, Alan, you'll be last.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Alan Phipps. I was a member of the steering committee representing the Alaska Center for the Environment and the Susitna Valley Association. groups I represent support this package, and we signed on, decided to ratify. Obviously, as with everybody in the process, we aren't completely happy with it, but we feel that the need for immediate protection on our lands is important, and so we agreed to work for its passage this session. I'd like to address a couple issues briefly. We feel that the buffer prescription on state lands in this package is an extremely important part of the package. And the reason that a minimum no-cut zone of 100 feet is important in that we don't always have the funding to do site-specific determinations on where we can be cutting timber and where we can't on adjacent to fish habitats. So we feel it's important for the state to set policy and statute that the first 100 feet are there to protect our fisheries resources. And I might add that the 100-foot no-cut on state lands is a bit of a compromise from the National Marine Fisheries Service position, because they suggest that tributaries as well as the fish-bearing streams should be protected, and this buffer relates to anadromous and other fish waters only. The other thing that is important about buffers that isn't in this package is a requirement for wind firmness, and we are concerned that even with the 100-foot no-cut plus 200-foot management zone on state lands, that it might not be enough to protect those corridors from high winds and eventual blowdown of those corridors. Another issue, which has been touched upon relating to the agency promulgating regulations, a critical part of this package for us is the maintenance of the separation of powers between the agencies. The package does talk a lot about how the agencies relate to each other and coordinate their administration of the Act, but we were sure to make it clear in the package that the individual agencies maintain their powers to enforce their own statutes and regulations. And because of that, we urge that the agencies proceed with promulgating regulations under their own statutes if they feel that's necessary to protect the resource that they have been given charge of. In regards to the consideration of the options, option one is a part of the package, and like I stated previously, things were traded away to get that. And I'm a little disturbed that the options have been discussed today, because to discuss the options by members of the committee is to violate the agreement. Our agreement is that we support this package as is. So I hesitate to discuss that in detail, other than to say that we support option number one as a part of the package. And one reason it's important for us is that even though it may pertain to federal lands, it is state resources that we are protecting. And we feel it is appropriate for the state to set the standard for the protection of those resources. I believe that catches the high points. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions, Mr. Phipps? If not, thank you very much. And I do want to thank everyone that has worked on this very much. I do know, and we tend to understand the process too, to try to get six or seven of us to agree on something around here is a major deal, as you well know. So having the group that you had to work on it, and I know some people are disappointed in the fact that we just can't slick this thing through here, but I think our responsibility as Representative Navarre and other members of the committee, Representative Hudson and stuff, have looked at it, that it I do not feel it would be good public policy unless we get a mandate from somewhere up above that this thing really goes. I think it's probably our intention to hold it and work on it during the interim and come back and see if we can get through this process, and then it will show us the strength and the weaknesses of it. If the organization falls apart, I guess that's it. It could come back together if it's, and I feel it is a very worthwhile process, and I hope that the public will be served better by this and that we'll all feel better. And I am very interested to work with it. I know I speak for my co-chair also, and the whole committee is willing to work with that. So we will be available during the interim, and unless we get some further directions from on there, this probably is where it will stay. So are there any other questions from committee members?
Yeah,